morning and welcome to this week's edition of the Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. I'm Lance Kenmore with the Kenmore team, and we're here every Saturday right here on News Talk 870. As always, you can contact me directly on my cell phone at 727-8977 or visit us on the web at kenmoreteam.com. I always like to thank John and everybody here at the station for working to make this happen. Mr. John McKay, how are you doing?
Well, I'm glad that my grass is getting greener.
Yes, absolutely. It's that time of year. In fact, I think we're going to talk a little bit about that on the show.
With all the rain, it's exploded.
Yes, it definitely did. We got our fair share of that. You throw a little fertilizer on it, and you're looking good.
Neighbor's dog helped.
Neighbor's dog probably helped a little too much. We also have with us here in the studio our in-house lending specialist, Mike Denslow with Home Street. Mike, how are you?
Oh, doing good. Just spring has sprung.
Absolutely. It's busy. People are out and about, and there's a bunch of yard work to do. So we know how that goes for sure. Well, we always like to start off our show with our crazy celebrity real estate story. Now, this one's a little bit different, and it's a little bit longer because there was some research involved there. If you might remember a couple weeks ago, a certain president got in trouble for referring to his Florida estate as the Southern White House. And there was a big to-do on the news story about that, on the news about that, and people were very upset. And so it was interesting because I said, you know, and it's known as Mar-a-Lago is his resort down there and where he spent some of his time. So I thought I'd dig into Mar-a-Lago a little bit and do a little research because sometimes you don't always get the whole story. So, and it was really a little bit shocking. So back in 1973, cereal, as in the cereal you eat for breakfast, era's Marjorie Post mm-hmm. cereal there. Okay, she actually donated her 128-room Palm Beach mansion, Mar-a-Lago, to the U.S. government to be used as the winter White House, as she described it. I mean, this is totally, like, I'm blown away as I'm doing the research for the show. Didn't see that reported in anywhere. Okay, and so it's interesting because it was... There's a little foreshadowing there to how it's kind of come true now with Donald Trump in there. So Post, at the time, was one of the richest women in the U.S. She finished building Mar-a-Lago in 1927. Back then, it cost $7 million. And it sat on 20 acres. Okay, you got, as you've seen in the pictures, you've got the Atlantic Ocean on one side, Florida's intercoastal waterway on the other. So what happened is upon her death, Post willed the home to the American government. She wanted it to be used as a warm weather retreat for the president. So crazy foreshadowing there. But in 1981, here's a classic move. In 1981, the government actually returned Mar-a-Lago to her estate. Because they were complaining about the high annual maintenance cost, which at the time was running about $1 million a year. So then enter Donald Trump into the equation there. He actually made his first offer for the property is reported to have been $28 million and was turned down. Then what happens? The Florida market crashes. Everything slumps. Trump ends up getting the property 4 years later for $5 million and then paid $3 million for Post's antiques and furniture. He then turned it into a private club in 1995, built on a 20,000 square foot ballroom, and absolutely went through and remodeled the thing. So I mean, there's a lot of history there. And actually, the history of at one time, the government actually owned it for the purpose that he's using it for now. Just blows my mind. So that was interesting. Now, it of course, it's Donald Trump, so it hasn't always been a rosy relationship there with the Palm Desert town that it's located in. Funny enough, he hasn't always seen eye to eye with them because with the town of Palm Beach, he's fought with them over the size of his American flag that he flies. He actually installed an 80-foot flagpole, and Palm Beach ordinances prevent flagpoles from being higher than 42 feet. So there you come in with your ordinances and CCNRs that we talked about.
Hey, Lance, how tall is your flagpole?
Mike, I'm at 40.
Okay.
Okay. Good. So, yes, I also like to be patriotic there. I am a fan of the flagpoles. Now, he did come to terms with them. Some lawsuits ensued, of course. And he agreed to lower the pole to 70 feet and make a $100,000 donation to some veterans' charities. So, there you go. That is a lot longer story than we normally run, but property-based, something I had no idea about, and still absolutely the history of that property blows my mind. So
you learn a lot when you find out the rest of the story.
Absolutely the rest of the story. So that is just, I was totally shocked by it. Very, very cool story there. Now, in related news, one of the things we always like to temper that with some of these news stories that affects the rest of us in our everyday life. And that was last week. Most people saw that the Federal Reserve went ahead and raised its benchmark short-term interest rate by a quarter point. So one of the things that people ask is, okay, how's that going to be affecting me? Luckily, one of the things that happens is this had been predicted for quite a few months. So most of the mortgage markets had worked in that rate to their current rates. So we didn't see a huge uptick, but just for so people can see historical sakes, it does. Last week we did hit 30-year fixed rate mortgages averages around 4.2%. And this time last year that was running about 3.7. So based upon those rates, things have ticked up a little bit. Who knows what's going to happen later this year, but still everything is predicting to that there could be an additional rise. So when you look at that, what it equates to in your payment, if you're shopping for a house, moving roughly a quarter point on a $200,000 home, that's going to affect your payment between 25 and 30 bucks, depending upon what you're looking at and what program. So still steady, still historically amazing low rates. But if someone is thinking about buying in the spring market, if people were guessing or betting their money on something other than the NCAA tournament in your brackets, if we were going to run a bracket contest on interest rates, most people would bet that there could still be a rate hike later this year. So now might be a time to definitely get in to Mike's office, reach out to him at Home Street, and see what you can do about getting pre-qualified and starting that process now. Mike, did I really screw up that segment? I mean, I used a news story there, you know, and put my own spin on it, but
no, it sounded good. I just sat back and listened. It was kind of funny. I've never heard so much mortgage talk out of you, and it was great.
I know, but it was it when I do my research for the show and look at all the headlines, I couldn't ignore that was dominating what we were looking at in the last week or two as far as headlines and what people were looking at. So along that same lines, last week we talked a lot about buyers focused on buying some investment property. Had a couple listeners reach out to me, so thank you for that and those referrals. We had quite a few people in that exact situation that we were talking about, so it was nice to have a little more in-depth conversation with them. Right now, though, we're looking at that spring market, and we've looked at we've had a great market for sellers. We've talked a lot about low inventory. But what happens in markets like this is sometimes people get a little too overconfident when they're going to put their home on the market, and they ignore some of the basics that we talk about when you're going to be selling your house. So I put down just a couple of those key terms and why you might want to do that. Because what happens when the market gets really, really good and you've got a strong market, it's very easy for people to get kind of glossed over by that, ignore some of the fundamentals, and then start pushing the limits of that market too far. And so one of the first things that we always talk about when we go into the spring and selling, and that is paying attention to your curb appeal. We've talked about it. We've gone over it with people before, but it still is amazing how many people don't get this done properly before putting their home on the market. Some very, very basic stuff in the front of the house. We've got, I mean, you can trim your trees, you can have the bushes trimmed up, get all of that looking really, really good in the spring. Also, pressure washing your driveway, getting rid of some of those oil spots, cleaning off the sidewalks, getting rid of all the, you know, there was salt everywhere this winter, especially the winter we've had. A lot of times that just gets swept up to the edge of the building. It's amazing how different it looks when all of that gets swept up, washed away, and cleaned off. Also, what happens with the weather that we've had a lot is we had a lot of snow and stuff sitting against front doors and entryways, and that water and snow ends up taking some of the stain away. You get some of the peeling paint. And so as you're doing that exterior work and curb appeal, really focusing on that walkway up to the house and then the front door, because invariably the clients spend an extra 25 to 30 seconds standing there while the realtor goes and opens up the lockbox to get the key out. So when you're just standing there for that extra amount of time and not moving, you start to look around and you start to notice things you generally wouldn't notice. So if you have a fresh coat of paint, a fresh coat of stain on that front door and on that entryway, it's going to immediately convey to the buyer that you must have maintained the rest of the house this way, even if you haven't. A lot of times buyers, I tell people, buyers are going to decide in the first 60 seconds, usually, if this is a house that they're going to consider. And a lot of that is based upon that first impression. It's one of the reasons why we tell people to spend so much time on it. Another thing that you can add to that curb appeal is it's finally, I thought I would never get here, warm enough that you can put some of those flowers back in the front, in those front planters, add some color to the front. Go ahead, get the windows clean so you've got the windows sparkling inside and out, and that's going to make the whole house look better. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the biggest keys that you can do to help increase that value. People are still going to be comparing. Even in a tight market like we have, it's very rare that a buyer is going to just look at one house and then that's the house they're going to purchase. They are still, even in a tight market, going to comparison shop. And when they comparison shop, they're comparing your house to the other three or four that they see. Especially in the tight market when there's not three or four more to see, the other ones that they do end up seeing are new construction model homes. And so now they're comparing your resale home to brand new construction model home. So that's what you're modeling some of your curb appeal prep after as you look at going on in the spring market. That's the first of the major tips that we have. We have two or three more big ones. When we come back from the break, we're going to talk with Mike Denslow at Home Street about what's going on the mortgage side and get a few more of these tips for being ready to sell in the spring.
Right here on News Talk 870.
Whoa. Welcome back to the Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. We've been going over some historical subjects today. We kind of delved into some history of Mar-a-Lago Resort in Florida. And we've also been talking about locally getting your home ready to sell in the spring market. It's still easy to make some mistakes. We've seen it. We had a couple listings over the last 3 to 4 weeks that weren't selling even in this market. We went out, did some analysis, talked to the folks, went over some of the mistakes that happened along the way, fixed those, and then got that home back on the market and sold in a couple days. So a lot of people sometimes in a market that's so hot miss some of those basics and just make a few key mistakes that you can't ignore the basics. A lot of people try to, in a really hot market, ignore the data, ignore some of the basics, and it can end up causing them some problems. So we had seen that, wanted to bring that to light on the show. We talked about the first one, increased curb appeal, before the break. At the same time, we have a lot of buyers out there trying to buy. As we're putting these homes, we're avoiding these mistakes, getting homes on the market for sellers. We know that things are not always automatic, and I wanted to talk to Mike about a couple things that I've heard from folks. One of the things that I'm seeing a lot of in the last couple weeks is I get a lot of people coming in, and then they go and they go and talk to different lenders, or before they come into our office, they say, "Gosh, I just I've got these three lenders, and they're pretty close on rate, but this one is, you know, this one is a half a point lower on the rate, and I'm just trying to figure that out." And I'll look at it and I'll say, "Well, there's a problem here, because I've seen this before. I recognize the name of the company. It might be national. It might not be local. And I know sometimes there's some introductory rates, and it's hard sometimes, and no fault to the clients or the public because they don't do this all the time. But sometimes the advertisements that come out look a lot like the rate, but is in very small print at the bottom. You will see sometimes it's not guaranteed. It's based on reviewing credit. It's based on reviewing income. And so it's easy to get caught up just on that rate and then not understand the whole process. So at that time, we usually turn them over to Mike, and he can sort that out. So, Mike, what's going on in your world with situations like that?
Well, yeah, there is a lot of things with national lenders. That's why I always promote local. Being able to go into somebody's office and sit down and hash it out. Interest rates just aren't that different between lenders that much anymore. It's just that we're all within just percentage points of each other. So if anything is way off, way low, yeah, I mean, that's a there's definitely a concern there. What I've seen and what I think people need to do this year is just be prepared to be in position to buy a house. And the proactivity that we're trying to get people to do is just, hey, let's get you pre-approved. Let's go over all the numbers. I had a conversation with a couple retirees last week where I said, you know, just come in. They were talking about buying something in the fall. And I said, well, just come in. Let's have a conversation. How much do you think you can sell your house for? How much do you think you're going to net from your sale? And then how much do you think you want to buy? Now, all of a sudden, we have a conversation of what this estimated new payment is going to be, and if that's in their, you know, fixed income budget. And okay, well, yeah. And we sat there and we talked for 20, 30 minutes, and I didn't pull their credit. I didn't do anything. We just had that initial discussion of how does this sound? You know, they were able to ask me a ton of questions, and I was able to ask them some questions, give them some answers that maybe they didn't think about. And they're like, all right, you know, now they're thinking about building. How do we build without moving twice? I mean, there's just all this discussion. And that's the conversations that I like to have, is just being prepared. Now, if a buyer is looking to buy right away, you have to be pre-approved. I mean, there's just not enough time in this market right now to say, oh, I found the house I like, and now let's go through the process. Because it's going to be gone.
It is. Mm-hmm. And I mean, we had three in the last week that were in multiple offers with more than two offers on them. And that's exactly right, is we need to have that in hand in our digital file so that we can push the button and email that over with the offer. Because when we find the right one right now, we usually have an hour or two to act on that.
And wow. How do you think sellers look at pre-approval letters from out-of-town lenders?
Well, they look at them really closely. And a lot of time it depends on the agent that is counseling that seller or representing that seller. Some of the very best agents know when deals are going to close. And so they're telling their seller, I know this lender. I do a lot of deals with them. They always close. I don't know this other lender, so I'm not sure. And so when you're looking at three or four offers and maybe potentially a bidding war, you want to be sure because you get one chance at that deal. And it'll be next to impossible, not next to impossible, but much more difficult to recreate that initial fever the next time around. So the best agents in town are looking very closely at those pre-approvals.
The other thing that I'm doing is I'm talking about budgets. When I'm talking to people and how much of a house do they want to buy and how much they're putting down and, you know, those kind of things, I'm coming up with a budget, a monthly payment budget. Where are you comfortable? $1,200, $1,500? And we're breaking down exactly with their situation, with the income, with their assets, with their credit, how much of a house is that? What range of house, price-wise, should they be looking at to stay within their budget? There's a lot of talk about rate, but we all know, and you just said it, I mean, a quarter of a point difference in rate is typically only going to be $20, $30, maybe $35 difference in payment. So it doesn't change the price of the home very much that you're looking at. So I like to focus more on what that payment max is, what do you think your budget is, so that you can get into a house and you're not house poor.
Those are good tips, Mike, and really, really necessary in this market. So absolutely. If people need to do this, have that initial meeting with you, how can they get a hold of you?
Phone number is 572-3651, or they can email me at mike.denslow@homestreet.com.
Excellent. So we have a few more tips on what to be doing when you're selling, even in a good market. The second thing that we're doing when we walk through homes with people, when we look at homes for people, is we're talking to them about getting rid of stuff. We have a tendency, it's like, it's a law, it's a real estate law, like in general, you will fill up the amount of space you're given. If you have a 1,000-square-foot house, you fill it up. If you have a 2,400-square-foot house, you seem to find a way to fill it up. And so one of the things that we go with people and talk to them about as we walk through is it's time to get rid of some stuff. You need to get rid of the extra clutter. Get rid of the family pictures all over the walls. Get down to some very basic stuff. Because what happens, and even in closets, we tell people if you have 17 winter sweaters, we might want to get that down to two or three. And the rest can go in storage. So if you can get a pod or you can get a storage unit that you can rent, then we can take your stuff. It makes your closet look twice as big as it really is. Because if someone goes into a closet and it's just stuffed full to the gills, they'll be like, oh man, that closet's not that big. Look, stuff doesn't fit in it very well. It's amazing though. You take half of the three quarters of the stuff out, and then all of a sudden that closet looks huge. It's the same type of thing. Another tip that I always give people is I always say, if you have a three-car garage and you have two other cars parked in that garage, generally what would happen, normal people in a showing will jump in one of their cars and then they'll leave for the showing and they'll go. And I always tell people, if you want to be super, super aggressive, take the other two cars out of the garage when you leave for a showing and park them down the street or put them somewhere else. And people are like, Lance, do we really have to do that stuff? No, you don't. But if you want a really high offer quickly, it's going to help. Because what's going to happen is they're going to, most people don't spend a ton of time in the garage, but they'll open the door and they'll peek out there. Mm-hmm. And if they open a door to a three-car garage and it's empty, when you're like buying new construction, that thing looks huge. I mean, you're just like, oh man, this garage, it must be oversized.
We can fit our four sets of Christmas ornaments in here.
Absolutely. And I mean, you'd stick two cars in there and it's amazing. That garage doesn't look that big anymore. So little tips like that. If people are storing an RV beside a house, I tell them to go down, go to a storage unit, rent RV storage while we're listed and park the RV there. And I have the argument all the time, like once a month with sellers. And they're like, well, Lance, no, that shows we have RV parking at the house. And I said, no, when you walk around the corner, it shows that it looks like you have no room here because it's so full you can barely walk beside the RV in the fence. Now, if you move it and you put RV parking and people walk around the corner, they'll be like, oh my gosh, look at this huge open space. So there, it's just the mind works in mysterious ways, I say. And for buyers, it can be even more mysterious sometimes. So that is a couple of those tips and tricks of getting rid of some possessions. Another thing is if you know stuff is broken, we might want to fix it. Now, I'm not saying you want to have a full-blown pre-inspection. There's some different train of thoughts there. We could actually probably have an entire show on that. That might not always be the best idea. And there's some liability. There's some disclosure that goes along with that. There's some psychology about buyers in a contract. If you want more information on that, give us a call and my listing team can talk to you about why you might want to think twice about that. But if there are appliances that you know are broken or handles that need to be fixed, the more of that stuff you can fix before you go on the market, the better. Mm-hmm. A lot of times it could end up costing you more money in an inspection. It could also make your inspection report summary list be three pages, which could scare a buyer when two of those pages might all be minor fixes versus a buyer just getting a one page of two or three majors. So it can help hold deals together if there's stuff that you know is broken. Go ahead and get that stuff fixed. And then we always talk about it on the show that we are definitely aggressive on pricing. I actually had an email this week. I'm not sure if it was from a listener or just from a consumer that said that she was so excited to hire us, had heard amazing things about us, had done all of her research, but was highly concerned that we were giving houses away and pricing too aggressively. That was the best email I got last week because it was a great conversation where we got to have to say, and I call up and my standard line, I always have a joke and I'm like, look, I haven't given any houses away in 2 to 3 weeks and actually ever in my career. So we kind of went over pricing and data and how we prevent that from happening, but at the same time, maximize value. So love getting that feedback. It was a great conversation. We were able to really drill down on that price. So we still have to use some current data along with some artistic judgment to get our pricing in line with what the market is expecting. So we really like to go over those analysis, present real data, really jump into that with the clients. If you have any questions about that, you're thinking about putting your house on the market in the next 60 days during the spring market, please give us a call so that we can maximize the amount that you will realize from the sale of that house. 727-8977 is my number. Or as always, you can go to kenmoreteam.com, shoot us a message, and we will get back to you with an appointment time and answer your questions to the best of our ability. And we'll also, as always, be right back here next week.
Right here on News Talk 870.